Fragments of and allusions to the Manichaean version of the Book of the Giants have been recovered in medieval manuscripts in various languages, including Middle Persian, Sogdian, Uyghur, Coptic, Parthian, and Latin. The following is a summary of the surviving fragments and allusions, which I have attempted extremely tentatively to put in sequence. The summaries are also very tentative. M1. The 200 demons descend to earth. Their descent from heaven stirs up the other heavenly beings. They descend because of the beauty of the women they saw there, and they reveal forbidden arts and heavenly mysteries in order to seduce these women, and they bring about ruin on the earth. Enoch warns that the coming of the 200 demons will lead only to herding speech and hard labor. They then subjugate the human race, killing hundreds of thousands of the righteous in battle, forcibly marrying beautiful women, and enslaving the nations. The angels veil Enoch, and the righteous endure the burning, and Enoch the sage is mentioned. Samazad, Samhaza, begets two giant sons, Sahim, Oyach, and Patsam, Naraman, or Ahia, Chaya, and the other demons and Yaksaz beget the rest of the giants. So you see that there is one split lineage that came directly from Samyaza. That one is notable and mentioned, and that all the others, the other Yaksas, beget the rest of the giants. The giants grow up and wreak ruin upon the earth and the human race. The lamentation of humanity reaches up to heaven. Yima, a transmogrification of the Jewish god according to Mani's cosmology, accepts the homage of humankind as they plead for help. And someone boasts that Sam and his brother will live and rule forever in their unequaled power and strength. The giant Hobabas, or Humbaba, robs someone of his wife, and the giants fall out among themselves and begin killing one another and other creatures. Sam and his brother are mentioned. It appears that Sam has a dream in which a tablet was thrown in the water. It seems to have borne three signs, one portending woe, one portending their flight, and one portending their destruction. Naraman then has a dream about a garden full of trees and rows, and 200 of something, perhaps trees, that is trees, are mentioned. Someone recites a list of proverbs involving contrasts, usually between the lesser and the greater, or the derivative from the source. Naraman tells how he saw in the dream some who were weeping and lamenting, and many others who were sinful rulers. The giant Mahoe, son of Virogdad, Barakel, of 1 Enoch 6-7, hears a cautioning voice as he flies along at sunrise, and he is guided to safety by Enoch the Apostle and the heavenly voice, which warn him to descend before the sun sets his wings on fire, shades of Icarus. He lands and the voice leads him to Enoch. Enoch interprets this dream, indicating that the trees represented the egregori, the watchers, and also mentioning the giants who were born of women, something the trees are pulled out of. In M16, someone reports that someone ordered him not to run away, but to bring the message written on two stone tablets, showing it first to Naraman. He has brought them in order to share the contents of one tablet pertaining to the demons with the giants. Samazad tells him to read the writing by Enoch. Enoch the Apostle gives a message of judgment to the demons and their children, telling them that they will have no peace and that they will see the destruction of their children. He refers to the giants ruling for 120 years, and then he predicts either an era of earthly fecundity, presumably after the flood, or else the flood itself, and he's predicting the flood itself. Sam exhorts the other giants to cheer up and eat, but they are too sorrowful to eat and instead fall asleep. Mahoe goes to Atanbush, otherwise known as Utnapishtim, either another giant or another name for Enoch, and tells him all. When Mahoe returns, Sam has a dream in which he ascends to heaven. He sees the water of the earth consumed with heat, and a demon comes out of the water. Some beings, the protecting spirits, are invisible, but he sees the heavenly rulers. Then M19, Sam, Samazad, and Mahoe have a conversation. So remember that Samazad is Samyaza. Mahoe mentions his father, Virogdad. There are obscure references to weapons and a blessing on someone who saw something and escaped death, or would have escaped death. Sam and Mahoe search for something. Someone gives satisfactory assurance to Mahoe that he will be protected from Sam, but nevertheless Sam and Mahoe fall out and begin to fight. The wicked demons are glad to see the Apostle Enoch and assemble timidly before him. Apparently they promise to reform their ways and they ask for mercy. Enoch warns the demons that they will be taken from a fire to face eternal damnation, despite their belief that they would never lose their misused power. He also addresses their sinful, misbegotten sons, the giants, and describes how the righteous will fly over the fire of damnation and gloat over the souls inside it, and guard that they stay in there, I would add. M23, they, presumably the demons, take some heavenly helpers hostage. As a result, the angels descend from heaven, terrifying the 200 demons, who take human form and hide among human beings. The angels separate out the human beings and set a watch over them. They seize the giants from the demons and lead them, the children of the giants, to safety in 32 distant towns prepared for them by the living spirit at Arian Wizen, the traditional homeland of the Indo-Iranians, in the vicinity of the sacred Mount Sumeru and other mountains. These people originated the arts and crafts. The 200 demons fight a massive and fiery battle with the four angels. M24, a Tanbush does battle, accompanied by watchers and giants, and three of the giants are killed. An angel and others are also killed. Oyach and Ayach resolve to keep their promise to do battle, and they boast of their prowess. Four angels, by divine command, bind the Igrigori with everlasting chains in a dark prison and annihilate their children. Even before the rebellion of the Igrigori, this prison had been built for them under the mountains. In addition, 36 towns had been prepared for the habitation of the wicked and long-lived sons of the giants before they were even born. Oyach, or Aya, the primordial monster Leviathan, and the archangel Raphael engage in a great battle, and they vanished, according to one tradition. Oyah survived the flood and fought this battle after it. 3,280 years passed between the time of Enoch and the time of King Vishtasp, who ruled at the time of the prophet Zoroaster, who, along with Buddha and Christ, was an apostle who came before the final apostle Mani. There's a couple interesting things I wanted to mention there. That, when they talked about they're taken from the fire, they just endure the burning, and Enoch the sage is mentioned. Now that ties into what we've been talking about recently, and some things that I saw that, again, that Zen Garcia was talking about and his amazing stuff that he's tied up. And what he was talking about there is that the righteous, actually, in between this period and Christ coming back to earth, or coming to earth for the first time, the first appearance of the Savior, that the righteous had to endure that time period in hell because they had no Savior to come down and take them from Sheol. And that is what happens in the Chronicles of Longinus. And so go and check out that work. I've posted it. It's part of this playlist. It's been part of the playlist that this will be part of. So you can see it there, or go to Zen's work at Endeavor Freedom and check out the Chronicles of Longinus, or Longinus, and the Thracian Chronicles, and you'll see what I'm talking about there. And after that, we also, the other thing that I wanted to notice is that for some reason this person believes that the final apostle was Mani, or Mani. An effort to nuance this version is given after the summary. So A1. The angelic watchers beget the Nephilim and the giants, perhaps the same creatures, but perhaps not, through miscegenation with mortal women. These rapacious monsters inflict bloodshed and injustice upon the earth and destruction upon the sea, animals, plants, cattle, and humanity. All this is reported to Enoch, the scribe of interpretation. Enoch addresses God, praising him for his glory, knowledge, strength, and creative acts. A number of giants, including Hobabis and Humbaba, Mahoe, and perhaps the watcher Barak El, have a conversation in which they discuss killing, perhaps, of human beings. Following hints from the Manichaean version and the Midrash of Samyaza, perhaps we should reconstruct here an episode in which the giants have a first pair of dreams predicting the Great Flood. If so, the first dream seems to involve the effacing of a writing tablet by submerging it in water. Stuckenbrook also suggests that a fragment which refers to three shoots in a garden belongs to the second parable. The first dream may have told of an angel doing the effacing as a symbol of the destruction wrought by the flood. The second may have told of an angel descending and cutting down all but three shoots, representing the sons of Noah, in the garden. Mahoe consults Enoch the first time. It is possible that the first tablet was introduced at this point. These episodes are entirely lost, but their existence is deduced by later references in the fragments. The giants Oya and Mahoe have a conversation in which Mahoe tells Oya something he heard while in the presence of his, Mahoe's father, the watcher Barakel. Oya responds that he too has heard of four marvels, and he starts to make a comparison which pertains to a woman giving birth. There is a conversation among the giants in which one of them admits that, despite his own might, he has been unable to prevail in war against some heavenly beings, presumably the archangels. Oya mentions an oppressive dream which has disturbed him, and someone tells the giant Gilgamesh to recount his dream as well. Oya says something to his brother Hahia about the watcher Azazel, the watchers and the giants. In another fragment that may continue this speech, one of the giants resigns himself that there is no escape and that he and the others must die for their misdeeds. He refers to a vision that hinders him from sleeping. Someone enters the assembly of the giants. Perhaps a conversation continues in which the giants anticipate with dread their coming destruction in the flood for their sins, in which they will be stripped of their form and reduced to being evil spirits. The watchers tell the giants that they themselves are imprisoned and perhaps that the giants are being defeated. Mahoe and the two tablets are mentioned. The second tablet is now read. It is a letter from Enoch to the watcher Semyaza and his companions, and they are rebuked for their and their sons, the giants' corrupt acts, which have come to the attention of the archangel Raphael. They are warned of imminent destruction and ordered to release their hostages and to pray. Nevertheless, Oya informs the giants of a message from Gilgamesh and Hobabis, which involves the cursing of the princes and which cheers the giants up. The two giants Oya and Hahia have dreams. Hahia describes his in the assembly of the giants. He dreamed of gardeners watering a garden which produced great shoots, but a disaster of some sort destroyed the garden in a deluge of water and fire. The other giants are unable to interpret his dream. Hahia proposes that they consult Enoch for an interpretation. Then his brother Oya reports that he too had a dream, in which God descended to the earth, thrones were set up, and God sat enthroned amid a multitude of angels and presided over a judgment based on the opening of certain books. The giants, presumably unable to interpret this dream either, summon Mahoe and send him to Enoch, whom he has encountered before, to ask him to interpret the dreams. Mahoe takes wing and flies across the great desert until Enoch sees him and calls to him. Mahoe refers to this as his second visit and makes the request. Bits of Enoch's interpretation may survive in a fragment that mentions the violent deaths of a number of watchers, Nephilim, and giants, and also in a small fragment that says, "No peace to you." Enoch pronounces an eschatological or post-diluvian blessing of earthly prosperity. Presumably, much of the story came after this point and is now lost. Reconstruction of the Aramaic Book of Giants remains extremely subjective, but a number of objective factors limit the possible arrangements and point us in certain directions. The most important external factor is the assured sequence of fragments in some of the manuscripts based on physical joins. So we see that they're having problems with putting these things together and seeing how clearly they line up. A third factor is the internal evidence of the fragments themselves. Stuckenbrook, building on Garcia Martinez's comments, allows for passages that pertain to the early part of the Watchers Giants narrative when the giants are free agents after they, or better, the Watchers, have been imprisoned. He also points to the reference to two tablets in A10, with the second tablet being read later than the first, and to Mahoe's second visit to Enoch in A13. In both cases, earlier lost portions of the narrative are hinted at. The biggest difference between Stuckenbrook's sequencing and those of some other commentators is that he reconstructs two pairs of two dreams. Beyer, Reeves, and Garcia Martinez group the fragments pertaining to dreams into one episode. Cook, however, does reconstruct multiple dream episodes, although not in precisely the same order as Stuckenbrook, and Puek accepts the necessity of an earlier pair of dreams, although he does not accept that the material assigned to the second dream by Stuckenbrook in A5 belongs there. He puts it correctly, in my view, in the first dream. So we see that they really are fighting over how these reconstructions go together. And we see that the founder of the Manichaean religion was the Apostle Mani in 216 to 76 CE, who was raised in southern Mesopotamia in a Jewish Christian Baptist sect called the Elkazites. From age 12 on, Mani began to have visions. Eventually, his visionary experiences led to his being expelled from the sect, and he then founded his own religion, sending out missions to Iran, India, Syria, and Egypt. Late in his life, he fell out of royal favor and was sent to prison, where he died. He wrote detailed scriptures so that his doctrines would be preserved forever, even going so far as to invent a new script to write them in, but over time, nearly all of these scriptures have been lost. This makes it very difficult to reconstruct his original theology. We know that he drew on other world religions to interpret himself as the culminating revelatory intermediary for Christianity, Zoroastrianism, and Buddhism. We also know that the Manichaean religion taught an extremely complicated system, Gnostic dualism, centered around a cosmological myth about the war between the originally pristine realms of light and darkness. The physical universe was created as a trick to liberate the captive sparks of light in living beings from the realm of darkness. There were two classes of practicing Manichaeans: the elect, who lived ascetic monastic lifestyles of celibacy, vegetarianism, etc., and the hearers, who supported the elect financially and otherwise in the hope of being reincarnated themselves as elect in due course. Although most of Mani's scriptures are themselves lost, lists of the titles of these documents survive in works by both friendly and hostile writers who wrote in Coptic, Greek, Arabic, and even Chinese. Allowing for minor corruptions, all the lists mention the same seven works, usually in more or less the same order. These are the Gospel, the Treasure of Life, the Pragmatia, the Treatise, the Book of Mysteries, the Book of Giants, the Epistles, and the Psalms. For our immediate purposes, the only one of interest is the Book of Giants, a work apparently composed in Syriac, an Eastern dialect of Aramaic, and the book was entirely lost until the 20th century, but scant references to it survived in Latin, Greek, and Arabic, indicating that it involved battles of the ancient giants. Then, about a century ago, many highly fragmentary Manichaean works written in Central Asian languages were recovered archaeologically at Turfan in China, and much of the find remains unpublished even at present. Should we read that again? Then, about 100 years ago, many fragmentary Manichaean works written in Central Asian languages were recovered at Turfan in China, and much of the find remains unpublished. Among the published fragments are many badly eroded manuscripts of the Book of Giants in various languages. So we see again that they have found this very clearly. They probably have a very clear, good book of it, and we are not given that translation. The Manichaean versions adapted the story of the giants to fit Iranian mythology. Schiavo discusses these adaptations at length, and three of the most striking adjustments have to do with the names of the major characters. Sam, or Sam, is the name of the immortal dragon slayer in later Iranian epic. His name is given to the giant Ohiah, and Ohiah's brother Hahia is given the name Naraman, who in Iranian epic is a figure closely connected to Sam, either identified with him or presented as one of his close relatives. The name of the father of the giant Mahoe, the demon Varogdad, means given by lightning in Persian, a loose translation of Barak El, which is Hebrew for lightning of God. The watcher Barak El seems to be the father of Mahoe in the Aramaic version of the Book of Giants. Between Mani's Book of Giants and the stories of the giants related in the Enoch literature and in Jubilees, these were already good indicators of Mani's use of earlier Jewish traditions, a use confirmed by the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in 1947. These consisted of many hundreds of parchment and papyrus manuscripts in Hebrew and Aramaic, with a few also in Greek, most of which had rotted away into tens of thousands of fragments. Fragments survived as some of the Enoch books in Aramaic, and also the Book of Jubilees in Hebrew. J.T. Millick has also discovered roughly 6 to 10 extremely poorly preserved manuscripts of an Aramaic Book of Giants, apparently the document used by Mani as the basis for his scriptural work. These manuscripts give no indication of being sectarian compositions. Their paleographic dates roughly across the 1st century BCE, so presumably the book was composed before this, although how long before remains open to question. The kernel of the same story appears in the Bible in Genesis 6:1-4. But as with the Book of the Watchers, it remains debatable whether the traditions about the Watchers and Giants are creative expansions of the Genesis passage, or independent transmissions of stories that have been summarized and truncated in Genesis. So, and then it talks about the Midrash of Shemyaza, which Millick has published and translated in his edition of some of the Aramaic fragments of the Book of the Giants. And this work tells how at the time of the corrupt generation of the flood, the angels Shemyaza and Azazel make a bet with God that if they were to descend from heaven to earth, they would be able to resist the lure of the evil inclination. But after descending, they promptly lose the bet. They notice the beauty of mortal women and cannot restrain themselves from becoming sexually involved with them. Soon they find themselves revealing heavenly secrets to their mortal wives. Shemyaza begets sons named Haya and Ahaya. The angel Metatron, another name for the deified Enoch in the Hekala traditions, sends them a warning of the coming flood. Haya and Ahaya each have a prognostic dream. In the first, an angel descends from heaven and scrapes an enormous stone tablet with writing on it, which was spread across the whole world until only four words remain. In the second, there is a garden full of trees and gems, but an angel descends and cuts down everything but one tree with three branches. Both dreams predict the coming of the flood and the destructions of all human beings, except Noah and his three sons. The giants are then killed in the flood, but are consoled by the fact that mortals will use their names in incantations, and thus their fame will never cease. Shemyaza repents and suspends himself upside down between heaven and earth. Azazel refuses to repent and becomes a demon who entices men to corrupt deeds and who bears the sins of Israel on the Day of Atonement. Leviticus 16:7-10. The numerous and striking parallels with the Book of Giants are obvious. Although there is only one pair of dreams in the Midrash of Shemyaza, Stuckenbrook argues that the original Book of Giants had two sets, and that this may well be true also of the Manichaean version. Moving now from history of transmission to background influences, we should note that the Aramaic Book of Giants draws on ancient Near Eastern myth, rather as the Manichaean version draws on Iranian. Two of the evil giants in the Aramaic version are named Gilgamesh and Hobabas. Gilgamesh is an epic figure in Sumerian and Akkadian literature, best known from the Epic of Gilgamesh, a work whose importance in ancient Mesopotamia was comparable to that of the Homeric epics in ancient Greece. According to the epic, Gilgamesh, a huge semi-divine man, has many adventures with his friend, the wild man Enkidu. One of these is the slaying of the monster Humbaba in the cedar forest. But Enkidu dies tragically, and Gilgamesh sets out to discover the secret of immortality in order to avoid his friend's fate. He meets Utnapishtim, the Babylonian version of Noah, the only man to survive the flood. Unlike Noah, Utnapishtim was made immortal by the gods. Nevertheless, Gilgamesh fails in his quest, eventually dying and leaving only his heroic fame behind him. The giants Gilgamesh and Hobabas are reflexes of the Gilgamesh and Humbaba Hawawa of the Gilgamesh epic. Likewise, a Sogdian text of the Manichaean version refers to Atanbush, who is either another giant or Enoch, under another name. Enoch also survived the flood and was made immortal. Atanbush is clearly a reflex of Utnapishtim, and we may assume that he appeared also in some lost passage or passages in the Aramaic Book of Giants. So now, knowing this more clearly, we can see that that's not what happened. It's just that they simply gave their name to that person. That's the name that in their culture that they had given to that person. When really, there it was two cultures on the opposite, or not even necessarily on the opposite, but on just in different places looking at the same person and calling him a different name. But really, and then retelling the story, and you can see how it's kind of a case of the broken telephone, where when he's speaking to one culture that has one language, that entity is given a name in their language, but to another culture he's given another name. And so you see that it's the same story, and then there's just a bit of broken telephone in the way that the story is told. Just the fact that they have different names, we can actually correlate and see that those names really are the same name and they're the same person over and over, like Shemyaza and Gilgamesh and Utnapishtim, that these are really, they're the same people, just with a different name to a different culture.
And Adam lived 130 years, and begat a son in his own likeness, after his own image, and called his name Seth. Genesis 5:3. Information in Book 2, Adam and Eve, explains that Seth was conceived, then born 7 years after the death of Abel. Adam also named Seth, that means God has heard my prayer, his sadness over Abel's death, and has delivered me out of my affliction. But it also means power and strength. Following the deaths of Adam and Eve, Seth became the head of the house of Adam. He and his descendants continued to live on God's holy mountain and continued on in the priesthood. After Seth died, the headship was then passed on to Enos, then to Kenan, to Mahalalel, to Jared, to Enoch, to Methuselah, to Lamech, and then to Noah, who begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. After the birth of Seth and Achilah's son Enos, then men began to invoke the Lord by name, Genesis 4:26, and thus began the establishment of deity worship and the struggle between evil and good on earth among mankind. The struggle in the Middle East between the children of Seth and the children of Cain was a microcosm. Satan and his fallen angels established their rule over the children of Cain and built a magnificent civilization at the foot of the mountain, complete with music and strong drink, which served to increase the lust among them. When Baruch asked to see the tree through which the serpent deceived Eve and Adam, an angel explained to Baruch that the tree was the grape, the vine. The tree is sinful desire, which Sataniel spread over Eve and Adam. And because of this, God has cursed the vine, because Sataniel had planted it. And by the vine, he deceived the protoplast Adam and Eve. Satan and his co-conspirators bequeath knowledge of the worst kind upon mankind. And when they were drunk, hatred and murder increased among them. Then sin increased among them greatly, until a man married his own daughter or mother, or the daughter of his father's sister, until there was no distinction of relationship, and they no longer knew what was iniquity. And Satan taught them to make dyeing stuffs for garments of diverse patterns, and made them understand how to dye crimson and purple and whatnot. And the sons of Cain who wrought all this, and shone in beauty and gorgeous apparel, gathered together at the foot of the mountain in splendor, with horns and gorgeous dresses and horse races, committing all manner of abominations. Book 2, Adam and Eve, 28:13-14. By the time Enos was 800 years old, Cain, who had married his sister, Awan, in the Book of Jubilees, had a large progeny, for they married frequently, being given to animal lusts, until the land below the mountain was filled with them. Book 2, Adam and Eve, 12:16. When Jared became the head of the family of Seth, he admonished his people to not descend the mountain and join the children of Cain, who hung about at the foot of the mountain day and night to tempt the descendants of Seth to come down. However, in time most gave in to the temptation and defected and went down from God's holy mountain and joined them. After the death of Jared, only Enoch, Methuselah, and Lamech, Noah and Noah's family were left on the mountain. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Genesis 5:24. After Enoch became God's scribe, he wrote down all that was revealed to him in the secrets of the creation in 366 books, and was then allowed to return to earth and give the books to his sons and to admonish them about what was to come. Jude 14. And Enoch, also the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints, to execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. These are murmurers, complainers, walking after their own lusts, and their mouth speaketh great swelling words, having men's person in admiration because of advantage. Enoch also warned them of the impending flood, and that Noah and his family would be the only humans to survive it. 2 Enoch 39. And Methuselah lived 187 years, and begat Lamech. Lamech lived 182 years, and begat a son. And he called his name Noah, saying, This same shall comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands, because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed. Genesis 5:25, 28 through 29. Because Adam and Eve were the new and improved species of mankind, their descendants lived as perpetual youths for more than 100 years before they were able to bear children, then for hundreds of years more after that. However, that longevity decreased as time passed. The descendants of Adam up to Noah had lived between 65 and 182 years each before they reached a level of biological maturity that allowed them to produce offspring, or to beget. Yet Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Genesis 5:32. In this account of Noah's birth, information in the Ethiopian Apocalypse of Enoch tells why the people knew Noah was special, and it also explains why he lived for such a long time before producing children. And his body was white as snow and red as a rose, and the hair of his head as white as wool, and his demdema, his curly hair, or his afro, beautiful. And as for his eyes, when he opened them, the whole house glowed like the sun. And when he arose from the hands of the midwife, he opened his mouth and spoke to the Lord with righteousness. Lamech was afraid of him and fled. And he said to Methuselah, "He is not like an ordinary human being, but he looks like the children of the angels of heaven to me. His form is different, and he is not like us. His eyes are like the rays of the sun, and his face glorious. It does not seem to me that he is of me, but of angels." 106, 2-6 excerpts. And his body was white as snow and red as a rose. Now Methuselah knew where to find the transformed Enoch, and went to a dwelling place among the angels at the ends of the earth on Lamech's behalf. Enoch explained to his son the purpose of this special being called Noah. "There shall be a great destruction upon the earth, and there shall be a deluge for 1 year. And this son who has been born unto you shall be left upon the earth, and his three sons shall be saved when they who are upon the earth are dead. And upon the earth they shall give birth to giants, not of the spirit but of the flesh. There shall be a great plague upon the earth, and the earth shall be washed clean from all the corruption." Verses 16-18. Genesis 6 in Tanakh, the Holy Scriptures, reads, "When men began to increase on earth and daughters were born to them, the divine beings, the Grigori, the watchers, the overseers, saw how beautiful the daughters of men were, and took wives from among those that pleased them. It was then that the Nephilim appeared on earth, when the divine beings cohabited with the daughters of men who bore them offspring. They were the heroes of old, the men of renown." 6:1-4 excerpts, and that's the Tanakh. Genesis 6:4 in the King James Bible reads, "There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children with them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown." Job 1:6. "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them." The phrase "sons of God" means simply that God created them. So in that respect, Satan and his rebellious followers were all sons of God. Some of these fallen angels were the watchers, or those whose responsibility it was to monitor and supervise mankind's activities and progress in their assigned sectors of earth, and then report back to God. When Enoch was taken and placed in the fifth heaven, he saw them imprisoned there. Quote, Enoch 18:1-4. "He saw many and countless soldiers called Grigori, of human appearance, and their size was greater than that of great giants. And they, the angels, said to me, 'These are the Grigori, who with their prince Sataniel rejected the Lord of light, and 200 myriads. And 3 of them went down on the earth from the Lord's throne to the place Ermon, Mount Hermon, on the northeast boundary of Palestine, and broke through their vows on the shoulder of the hill Ermon, and saw the daughters of men how good they are, and took to themselves wives, and befouled the earth with their deeds, who in all times of their age made lawlessness and mixing, and giants were born, and marvelous big men, and great enmity. The Grigori, who appeared like men, were biologically compatible with human females. Through sexual intercourse, they gave rise to a species of man whose flesh or physical constitution was corrupt, according to the precepts of God. As a result of this mixing of two different species, mutations occurred, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. After the rebellious watchers took wives unto themselves, they began to teach their wives and their offspring. From Scripture, they taught humans eternal secrets which are performed in heaven, the art of making swords, knives, shields and breastplates, bracelets, decorations, all kinds of precious stones, and alchemy, and there were many wicked ones, and they committed adultery, and all their conduct became corrupt. Amazros, as opposed to Amaros, so because this is a different reading, taught incantation, and the cutting of roots, astrology, and the knowledge of the signs, and the seeing of the stars, the course of the moon, as well as the deception of men. Furthermore, these giants consumed the produce of all the people until the people detested feeding them. So the giants turned against the people in order to eat them. And they began to sin against birds, wild beasts, reptiles, and fish. And the flesh was devoured one by the other, and they drank blood. Then Michael, Surafel, and Gabriel observed carefully from the sky, and they saw much blood being shed upon the earth. That's 1 Enoch 7-9 excerpts. This reading is from a different translation, apparently, that had slightly different wording. Enoch told his sons that he had also been informed that the children of the watchers would arise again after the flood, just as God had told him. After that, so this is scripture again, 1 Enoch 106:19. After that, the flood, there shall occur still greater oppression than that which was fulfilled upon the earth the first time. For I do know the mysteries of the Holy One, for he, the Lord, revealed them to me, and made me know, and I have read them in the heavenly tablets. 1 Enoch 106:19. According to Berosus, the ancient Sumerian king Gilgamesh, circa 2750 BC, was renowned for his great strength, but also for his cruelty and oppressiveness towards his subjects. He claimed that he was one-third human and two-thirds God, and should therefore not have to die and afterwards be consigned to the netherworld. He thus embarked on a perilous journey in a futile effort to find the secrets of immortality, but ultimately failed. Several Assyrian-Babylonian bas-reliefs depict Gilgamesh as being a giant. On one he is holding a lion, and on the other watering a bull. In direct proportion to the size of these modern-day animals, his height was at least twice that of the average human male of today. Even more if he was watering a bull. It is written in the Gilgamesh epic that when Enkidu, Gilgamesh's companion, approached a group of shepherds, they said to each other, "He, Enkidu, is like Gilgamesh, twice the size of ordinary men." The Fairy, Tablet 2, Column 1, Lines 11 and 12. An archaic stele housed in the Louvre Museum shows the Assyrio-Babylonian god Shamash seated while a human female waters his sacred plant. The Stele of Hammurabi, also kept at the Louvre, likewise shows Shamash seated while he dictates his laws to Hammurabi. On both stela, even while seated, one can see that this god was of giant proportions. A votive relief of the great god Asclepius and his family shows humans paying homage to him. Again, in direct proportion to the human in this illustration, the height of this god would be at about 8 feet. Likewise, a votive relief showing the goddess Persephone pouring a liquid atop the head of an initiate renders her to be at least twice the height and three times the size of the human cult member. The same holds true for Artemis, the goddess of the hunt, portrayed on a relief sculpture with human horsemen or hunters. A rock painting at Diana's Vow Farm near Rusape, Rhodesia, has been dated back to 3000 BC after the flood. It depicts a crowd of people gathering around a large, centralized humanoid figure that is about six times their height. This figure, depicted as wearing a mask or of actually having the head of an antelope, is most likely a god. In many ancient cultures, the resident god was synonymous with kingship, just as it was with Gilgamesh, a god-king. Other post-Diluvian giants are mentioned in Numbers 13, 32, and 33, as inhabiting the land of Canaan, to the west of the Jordan River. And they, scouts, brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched into the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, Grigori, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. The sons of Anak were named in Joshua 15 and 14 as being Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai. These giants were cannibals, as were the cyclops described in Homer's Odyssey, who were created by Poseidon, the Greek god of the sea. These would resurface after the great flood, as some of the descendants of Noah fell again under the influence of Satan and his legions of demons. The post-diluvian giants built habitats for themselves, most notably at Petra, located in the desert of what is now southern Jordan. They dwelt in the land of Ammon, as is written in Deuteronomy 2. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites call them Zemzumim, a great people, and many, and tall, as the Anakim, the Anak. But the Lord destroyed them, the Anakim, before them, and they, the Zemzumim, succeeded them, and dwelt in their stead. That's 20 and 21 of Joshua. And as is mentioned, the Satans created creatures whose antecessors also resurfaced after the cataclysmic flood. These hybrids are the creatures of mythology. The mermaids, centaurs, cyclops, griffins, basilisks, dragons, leviathan, the Lernaean hydra, the dogs of hell, Orthos and Cerberus, the minotaur, and the like. The apocryphal book Baruch notes the destruction of the hybrid giants. There were the giants famous from the beginning, that were of so great stature and so expert in war. Those did not the Lord choose, neither gave he the way of knowledge unto them. But they were destroyed because they had no wisdom, and perished through their own foolishness. 3:26 and 28. That's the book of Baruch. In his epic poem, The Odyssey, Greek poet Homer describes the giants as louts without a law to bless them, who lived in isolation from each other, and who dealt out rough justice to wife and child. The Greek version of 3 Baruch puts the number of giants that were destroyed at 409,000. It is important to note here that regardless of the physical form of any human being today, the souls of the victims of Satan's wickedness against all humanity are saved if they believe and trust in God and follow his commandments. Before Enoch was taken for the final time, he admonished his sons to remain in the priesthood of Almighty God. And I swear to you, yea, that there has been no man in his mother's womb, but that already before, even to each one there is a place prepared for the repose of that soul, and a measure fixed how much it is intended that a man be tried in this world. Yes, children, deceive not yourselves, for there has been previously prepared a place for every soul of man, and every grievous and cruel yoke that come upon you, bear all for the sake of the Lord, and thus you will find your reward in the day of judgment. 2 Enoch 49 through 52 excerpts. During that age of human degeneration, the population on earth had grown rapidly to nearly 6 million. God had decided initially to destroy all living creatures from the face of the earth via a global flood, and to thereby put into effect a total recall of all human souls. However, Noah, like Adam, was a special creation, and he and his family were selected to survive that mass extinction. Noah and his family were found to be perfect in their generations. They therefore met God's two basic criteria of survival for that time. First, they were at once both spiritually and physically fit, meaning neither their spirit nor their genetic makeup had been adulterated by that evil species, those hellish beings, the fallen angels. And second, the family was genetically varied enough to continue to produce humans with the proper attributes necessary to repopulate the entire earth. God sent Asurial, his angel, to the son of Lamech to warn him about the impending deluge, and that he and his family would be preserved. And God saw that the wickedness of mankind was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Genesis 6:5. Hud, chapter 11 of the Holy Quran, verse 39 reads, "And he, Noah, started making the ark, and every time the chiefs of his people passed him by, they mocked at him. And he said, If now you mock at us, the time is coming when we shall mock at you even just as you mock now." The Chaldean Persian Sibyl was Sambith, Noah's daughter-in-law. She recorded how before the flood, Noah had urged the people of his time to repent their sins, but they sneered at him, each one calling him demented, a man gone mad. 1 Sibyl, lines 171 and 172. So that's the goddess Sibyl. And that was Noah's daughter-in-law. Noah, however, continued pleading with the people and even went so far as to tell them what would happen to them. "You will laugh with a bitter smile when this flood comes to pass. I say, the terrible and strange water of God. Whenever the abominable race of Rhea disappears, root and all, in a single night, and the earth-shaking landquaker will scatter cities complete with their inhabitants, and the hiding places of the earth, and will undo walls, then also the entire world of innumerable men will die." Lines 182 through 190. The exploits and avatars of the ancient goddess Rhea, the daughter of Gaia and Uranus and sister and wife to Cronus, are noted in chapter 2 of this book. The abominable race of Rhea refers not only to her own offspring, Hera, Hestia, Demeter, Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon, but also to those who worshipped her and the other fallen angels. When God instructed Noah to take the clean beasts and fowls of the air by sevens, he meant seven each of the male and seven of the female for a total of 14, and yet they were two and two. In this ark were eight humans and creatures from every sector of earth. Every beast after his kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth after his kind, and every fowl after his kind, and every bird of every sort. And they went in unto Noah into the ark, two and two of all flesh, wherein is the breath of life. Genesis 7:14 and 15. The extinction that came about as a result of this global flood was a partial extinction, as God's post-diluvian life forms were the same as the antediluvian ones. Furthermore, the seventh-day extinction was not about completely eliminating and then recreating plant and animal life on Earth, as the Earth's ecosystems were already in equilibrium and there was no need for this. This was one about eliminating the hybrids that Satan created, and those humans who, through Satan's clever devices, had become physically and spiritually unfit and corrupt. And God saw that the wickedness of mankind was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Genesis 6:5. And he, Noah, started making the ark, and every time the chiefs of his people passed by him, they mocked at him. He said, If now you mock at us, the time is coming when we shall mock at you even just as you mock now.